Hey everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for September 29th, 2023. Game number 160 nearly upon us here. So we are happy to be bringing you this episode produced by Mike Rogerson, available wherever you can get your podcasts. So stick with us here. We'll be with you. Well, we'll see how long this playoff run goes here for the Blue Jays. But Arden, it's been a wild ride since we last spoke, and I'm sure more twists and turns ahead. Game 160 almost upon us here. How are you doing?
Only 160, is that all? That's yeah. It? That's only like, what, 9.5 NFL seasons? Something like that?
Yeah, it used to be 10. Yeah, it's a lot of games. It's a lot of games, maybe weeks more of games ahead, or the Blue Jays might be done by Sunday. We'll see. So, you know, it is kind of wild when you think back to, you know, just all the different position players that they've gone through, all the different storylines that we've seen. Opening day starter Alek Manoah, you know, back to the end of spring training, you know, you have Otto Lopez and Nathan Lucas. And I think it was Clearwater. I want to say you and I were in Clearwater, Florida, debating that one. Does that ring a bell?
I remember we talked about it for like 3 days because it was the only storyline at the end of camp. So that was like our little chat or hit for Central or whatever for like 3 straight days. Was yes. Who's going to win the 13th position player spot that doesn't even play?
Yeah, exactly. That, because yeah, at the end of every spring game, you and I would do, or you and Shy, or me and Hazel, or whatever the combination is, we would do a chat wrapping up the storyline, and Otto Lopez got so much play for a guy who, has he appeared on the Jays this year?
No. Yeah. I think he got hurt somewhere along the way. He got out to a tough start. He was in Toronto at one point. He might have been in the taxi squad for someone, because I know I talked to him in Toronto at some point during the season, but I don't believe he actually was ever activated to the big league roster this year.
Yeah, that rings a bell for me too. I think I saw him at some point, so maybe that's why I have it in my head. But no appearances for Otto Lopez. This will not be the Otto Lopez podcast. We have bigger and better things to discuss here, as you would hope on September 29th. I mean, this is really, you know, this is an exciting time of year for baseball. And for the Blue Jays, they would rather it was a little less exciting. But around the league, you know, it's fun to scoreboard watch. It's fun to see what's going on. As we're recording this, so it is September 29th around 11 a.m. So we do not know what is going to happen in this Rays series. We do know that Yusei Kikuchi is going to be pitching the opener of that series, and we do know that the stakes are incredibly high for the Blue Jays, whose magic number is 2 as we record this. So I guess, like, Arden, what are you looking for this weekend? I know it's kind of an awkward time just because things are going to change really quickly, but when you're going into this weekend, what are you looking for from this Jays team?
Well, like, here's the thing. Victor Martinez showed Otto Lopez this thing with his hands, and he's getting a lot more loft. And all right, I'm kidding. Look, the shorter the sample gets and the smaller the runway of games gets, I mean, the less certain I am in saying anything, right? The less definitive I want to be about anything. I could see the Blue Jays sweeping the Rays this weekend and like having this all done and dusted by Saturday, and, you know, fielding 2 like B squad lineups and just punting on the final 2 games and optimizing things for the wild card series. I could see them losing the first 2 games of the series and having to pitch Kevin Gausman on Sunday because the Mariners took care of business against the Rangers with you know, their crumbling bullpen, and George Kirby's on the mound for Seattle, and all of a sudden we're going into Sunday having no idea who's going to be in October. I could see the Blue Jays getting swept by the Rays and missing the postseason. Like, I could see it all. It's all on the table. I think that the most likely scenario, the most probable scenario, is that the Blue Jays are a postseason team. They finish wild card 2 and they go to the Trop on Monday for a workout. And then on Tuesday, they start a wild card series against the Rays. I think that's the most likely and probable scenario. But just because the scenario where they crater at the end and fall out of it and miss the playoffs is improbable doesn't mean that it is implausible.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen, which is wild. I mean, if that happens, if they miss the playoffs, like, what a failure of a season. That would be so bad after having this opportunity in front of them. But you know, we're not there yet. I think, you know, if that happens, you and I will have a lot to discuss on the next week's episode. But I don't want to go there quite yet. In the meantime, you know, we do have some real questions surrounding this team. And I guess they got one pretty big answer in the form of Brandon Belt, because, you know, this going into this week, that actually was one of the big questions for me around this team, was Belt and was Jordan Romano. And I think they've gotten one really resounding answer in the form of Belt. They haven't got any kind of satisfying answer in the form of their closer. But with Belt in particular, this is a guy who just seemingly does not need any kind of rehab ever. He just like comes back, no rehab games, draws a walk, gets some hits, hits a bomb. Like, this is kind of best case scenario for what they could have seen from Brandon Belt this week.
Yeah, Brandon Belt is what I would call a show and go player. And I've been around a number of those in my time covering baseball. And typically it does not go as well as Brandon Belt as it does with him. He really does make it seem, I don't want to use the word easy, because nothing that these players do is easy. But his ability to just come in rather cold without much of a ramp up, without seeing competition, without seeing live pitching in I don't know how long, and just step in and give you like a really professional plate appearance and draw a walk and judge balls and strikes really well and hit home runs, it's pretty remarkable. We saw it earlier this season when he hit the IL, didn't do the rehab assignment, came back, and he was Brandon Belt. We saw it in spring training when Brandon Belt really didn't appear much until the end of camp. Obviously, he got off to that really cold start at the beginning of the year, but he pulled himself out of it in a really huge way. So, you know, it speaks to just his ability. You talk to Blue Jays hitting coaches and they'll tell you, like, yeah, this is a guy who does not take long to find his rhythm and his tempo and his timing before a game. There are some hitters in this league who are taking hundreds of swings before games in the batting cages, on the field, into the net, in the tunnel, in the dugout before their plate appearances. I think Brandon Belt can take like a dozen swings before a game and say, yep, I found it. That's what I want. That's my feeling. I feel confident enough to go out and hit against the big league, the best pitching in the world in the big leagues. And it is really hard to argue with the results.
Yeah, it's impressive. It really is, to do that without any rehab assignments like that. I guess the baseball writer equivalent might be showing up at like 7 p.m., sitting down in the press box and just writing the game story of your life, you know, like just absolutely crushing it. But it's hard to do. And most players need some sort of ramp up before they can go in there and face, you know, Gerrit Cole. He's up there getting two hits against Gerrit Cole. It's actually like quite impressive. And it's, they need it because they're going to be facing a lot of right-handed pitching down the stretch and into the postseason.
Yeah, he's important at the top of that lineup in order to break up the righties and make it more difficult for Kevin Cash or Rocco Baldelli to match up with Blue Jays hitters late in the game. You know, if you got a run of three or four righties at the top of your lineup and you've got a really, really good right-handed reliever in your bullpen, that's a pretty obvious matchup. But then if you insert Brandon Belt in there, well, it does make it a little bit trickier for the manager on the other side. So, you know, I think that just with the amount of right-handed pitching the Blue Jays project to face in the postseason, whether it's Eflin Glasnow with the Rays, whether it's Lopez Gray with the Twins, I think that Brandon Belt with, you know, feeling good at the plate, feeling confident, seeing pitches, ruling balls and strikes well, as he always does, I think that's a very, very good thing for the Blue Jays to have.
Number two hitter, Brandon Belt, for the time being. You know, we'll see how they choose to order things moving forward, but he's such an important player for them. And I think, too, you know, like at this point with these games, like until you clinch, I think you kind of have to use Brandon Belt pretty much every day. As long as he's good to go, I think you need him in there, despite the fact that you see him in the dugout. He's got like, you know, a heat pack of some kind on his back to stay loose. Like, this is not a guy who's necessarily like the loosest and most limber. Especially just coming off the injured list. But I think you kind of have to push it here at this point in the season.
I don't worry about that so much with Belt. I actually worry about that more with Vladdy, because with Belt's DHing every day down the stretch, you're not able to get Guerrero a DH day, a day off his feet at first base. And we know that Vlad has battled a knee issue down the stretch here. So he's going to have to log a lot of innings in the field, you know, on turf down the stretch. And I think that the more optimal thing would be to get Vlad even an entire day off, honestly, once like the Blue Jays clinch. Like, I don't think that if the Blue Jays clinch, I don't think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. should play game 162, and maybe he only plays half of game 161. But as long as you have to field your A lineup every night, and Brandon Belt's a part of that, a designated hitter, the only place Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can play is first base.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you want to get Vladdy off his feet if you can, just given that he's been dealing with that knee for, well, he's been dealing with it for a while. He missed time with it last week, about 9 days ago. So you want to get him as rested as you can. Ideal world, you're able to do that with Jordan Romano too. And you, like, at this point, as we're recording this, his last two outings have been really rough. And I think you want to get him one to sort of get him back on track. I'm curious to hear where you land on this, Arden. But to me, if you need Jordan Romano Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, do it. Like, this is the time. This is when you need him. You got to be prepared to do that. However, best case scenario is he pitches once, he faces three batters, he throws like eight pitches.
Oh, yeah. No, obviously, right? And you don't want to be in a scenario where Jordan Romano is pitching all three games on the weekend. I think you do want to give him the opportunity for a get-right appearance one way or another. If it doesn't come up Friday, Saturday, maybe he starts Sunday's game. And maybe we're like playing the light show on Sunday. Why not, right? And just give him that inning to just sort through some things. Talking to him, I mean, he says the fingernail isn't an issue. You have to take his word for it. The big thing that I kind of want to see from him, or I think that the Blue Jays would want to see from him, it's just like a bit more velocity initially in his outings, like early in his outings. It seems like he's kind of like had to find it through his first four, five, six pitches the last few times that he's been out. And then he gets up there to, you know, the 97, 98, but you can have a bunch of damage happen early in an outing if you're more like 94, 95 in the zone. And I think that we saw that against the New York Yankees earlier this week when Austin Wells took him deep on a fastball. So I think that, you know, that's something the Blue Jays would like to see from him, is just like come out and first pitch of the outing is 97, 98, rather than this ramp up process where it's like 94, 95, and then he's finding it later on.
Yeah, no, that's a good point for sure. Those first batters matter a ton. That's obviously why he's in the game, is to get results right away. And it is really like an interesting dynamic with the Rays, because they played them last weekend. You know, the most likely scenario would be that they do play the Rays again next week. So that would be six games in a row. That would be 9 games out of 12. Like, you never see that in baseball. And the Jays know the Rays pretty well to begin with. So that actually introduces some interesting dynamics where, like, in the scenario that they do clinch Friday, for example, like, roll Ryu for six the next day. On the Sunday, roll guys out that maybe need a little tune up, but don't be afraid to use, you know, Mitch White or Bowden Francis to cover 4 or 5 innings in that game, because you don't want to give their hitters free looks. And I'm sure the same logic applies on the other side of the field.
I think you just worry about yourself. Like, once you clinch, you've got a checklist, and it's, all right, what do we need to see and what do each of our players need in terms of rest or usage? So you go around the bullpen and say, all right, Tim Mesa, all right, Jordan Hicks, all right, Yenesis Cabrera, like, what do you need out of these last like 18 innings that we have to work with? Do you want one of them? Do you want a little bit of work, or would you rather just rest and you know, we go to lower leverage guys and like you said, use a Mitch White and a Bowden Francis to get us through? You go through your position players. Who could use a day off their feet? How do we get that for them? Who could actually use some plate appearances? Hey, Davis Schneider hasn't had many of them lately. Let's get him some plate appearances. Like, how do you know, what kind of a rhythm does Whit Merrifield want to feel like he's in going into the postseason? So, you know, how do we get Cam Eden to attempt a stolen base at the big league level so that his first big league steal attempt isn't in a wild card series in the eighth inning of like a tie game? So how do we just kind of check off all these boxes on our checklist? That's what it becomes. But you're gonna have to beat the Rays on Friday to do that, and then you're also going to need a little bit of help from Seattle losing on Friday as well. And if you don't do that, well, then you got to go into Saturday needing to beat the Rays again, because you beat the Rays Friday and Seattle wins, the Blue Jays play before Seattle does on Saturday. So In that scenario, Saturday is going to be another must-win game, and you have to treat it that way.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, for a team that, you know, still has great playoff odds, well, some of those playoff odds where it's like 93% that they get in, some of that is like you're playing Sunday with Kevin Gausman on the mound and you're going all out and you're using everyone and you don't love that, you know, like you there's a huge difference as far as the Jays' chances of getting through the wild card round based on whether you can rest those guys Sunday or not. Like, I think that's actually like a pretty big swing variable for this team.
Yeah, obviously.
Do you have a preference between Twins and Rays? If you're looking at this through the Blue Jays lens, between those two teams, is there one that stands out to you as like a better matchup?
I think there's pluses and minuses with each. I think like you start with the starting rotation and you're going to see good pitching in either one, right? Like Sonny Gray, Pablo Lopez, really, really good pitchers. Tyler Glasnow, Zach Eflin, really, really good pitchers. So you're going to see really good starting pitching either way. You're going to see really good bullpens either way, like, you know, Pagan and Duran with, you know, with the Twins, and, you know, obviously Fairbanks and like the just cavalcade of, you know, different hard throwers from weird arm slots that are going to pour out of like the clown car that is the Rays bullpen. And then I think on the position player side, like the Rays kind of banged up right now. Obviously, we'll see about the availability of like a Diaz or an Arozarena. Twins also pretty banged up. Like Byron Buxton's on the IL, Correa's on the IL, Royce Lewis, Joey Gallo's on the IL. So they're kind of similar, right? Like when you think about it. So to me, if I'm the Blue Jays, like I'm pretty cool with either one. I, you know, you could convince me that like there's a percentage point difference for one or the other, but to me, the difference in terms of quality of opponent, I think, would be just really marginal.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Like if you look at the standings, right? Like the Twins, 85 wins, the Rays, 97. So that's a massive, massive difference. But I actually think like the Twins are better than their record. They've had some guys, you know, pop up late in the year despite those injuries. Like Edward Julian has been really good. Willie Castro is back from the injured list. He's been pretty good. You know, their pitching in a three-game series is obviously going to be strong, as it would be on the Tampa side as well. So I think these teams are like not so dissimilar. Then again, if you're the Jays, you don't try to finesse it. You know, to your earlier point, you don't try to set things up for one opponent or the other. You just try to get in, make sure that you're in as good a position as possible. And I actually think like, and this is not based in a lot of science or anything like that, but I think the Jays are going to win the wild card round. I think they're going to make it through because it's been this weird, weird season. It's been still pretty disappointing, you know, not to have clinched by September 29th. Like they might not make it, but I actually think they're going to make it. And I think they're going to win a round.
Based on just the feeling from within your gut?
Based on the feeling from within my gut, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wish I was better at accessing that feeling or emotions in general, because then I could join you in making such a bold prediction. But I will enter that series no matter who they're playing, where they're playing it, who's hurt, who's healthy, who's in the lineup, who's starting, whatever. I'm gonna enter it basically looking at it as a coin flip.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair way to look at it. That is the you know, what I think the numbers would tell us, and you know, we'll see. It'll be really interesting. But I do want to get into the roster and what that would look like. So why don't we step aside for a moment, and then when we come back on At the Letters, we can go a bit more granular as far as some of the decisions that the Blue Jays will face when it comes to actually setting a playoff roster, should they get that far. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. We are back on At the Letters, which you can find wherever you find your podcast. Thanks for joining us here. Lots to discuss, of course, this week alongside Arden Zwilling, and thanks to our producer, Mike Rogerson. Arden, as mentioned, this is a Blue Jays team that is likely to be in the postseason. And if they advance to the postseason, they are going to have 26 roster spots at their disposal. Right now, they're operating with 28. So that means one position player and one pitcher. It actually could unfold in a couple different ways, but they're going to have to cut a couple players from their existing roster to prepare themselves for that pivotal wildcard series. So let's dive into what that could look like. I guess like in an overarching way before we get to some of those really granular decisions. If you're the Blue Jays, how are you approaching this? What are some of the things that you're thinking about big picture when it comes to setting that roster?
Well, so we'll start here. I don't expect Danny Jansen to be good to go for a wild card series. I assume you agree. DS likely as well.
Exactly. I think even ALCS is unlikely, but if they were to make it to the World Series, then, which like there's a 10% chance of, by the way. So, you know, it sounds like pie in the sky, but it's also like, yeah, it could happen. If that happens, Danny Jansen, I think, could return.
So I'm not adding anyone to this roster who is not currently on it. Like Danny Jansen's not coming back. I don't think I'm putting like a Spencer Horowitz or an Ernie Clement on there. I'm not adding obviously like an Alec Manoa or a Nate Pearson or like, I just think we start there. So you're dealing with essentially just the 28 who are in the clubhouse on the active roster right now. And so you got to get that down to 26. I think Hyunjin Ryu is a pretty simple cut from that roster, just because he's probably not going to be used. He's not going to start one of the three games and he would be an awkward fit in the bullpen. You could revisit things with him for a divisional series roster, but I just don't think that he really has utility for you on a wild card roster. So like that's one cut immediately. And so now you are down to 13 pitchers. This is where you get to the decision of, do you want to carry 13 pitchers and 13 position players, or do you want to carry 14 position players and 12 pitchers? 13 pitchers is the absolute maximum that you can carry. So we're already down to that 13 on the pitching side. But if you want to carry 14 position players, which mean everybody who's on this roster right now, so that's all of your regulars plus Heinemann, Espinal, Merrifield, Schneider, and Cameron Eden, well, then you got to pick another pitcher to trim. I think that if you go that way, unfortunately for Jay Jackson, he's probably the last guy on the bullpen depth chart at this time. Maybe you can make a case for Trevor Richards based on recent performance, but he's been so strong for the Blue Jays and he has a lot of experience this year in leverage. He gives you a bit of length. He's an interesting matchup against lefties if you need him in that spot with his changeup. So I think he would have a lot of utility on the roster. So if I'm trimming another pitcher, I think it's probably Jay Jackson. Then you got 12 pitchers, 14 position players, boom, you're done. If you're going 13 and 13 and you're leaving Jay Jackson in your bullpen, or you're inserting like a Bowden Francis, Yusei Kikuchi, by the way, already is in the bullpen. If you're inserting a Bowden Francis to give you another length option, well, then you got to pick a position player to trim. And that probably comes down to either Cameron Eden, who is someone who you probably don't want taking a plate appearance in a wild card series, but who gives you that speed element off the bench, or pretty tough decision between a Davis Schneider or a Santiago Espinal. Does all that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that's sort of how things will go. And it's interesting because so I looked at the wildcard roster for 2022 to see how they operated last year and thinking that that could give us an indication as to what they're going to do this year. And last year, they took 13 pitchers for a three-game series with an off day on each side. So to me, that seems excessive. Like, I don't think you need 13 pitchers, three of whom are starting pitchers, right? So that's a 10-man bullpen for a three-game series with off days on either side. Like, I don't think you need to do that, but that's what they did. So I actually think that there's a very, very good chance they go with 13 pitchers, in which case you're choosing two of Cam Eden, Davis Schneider, and Santiago Espinal. So, you know, there are a couple different ways this could go, but my read is they probably would take that 13th pitcher.
I think so. I think they showed us last year what they're likely to do. Like Bradley Zimmer was available to them last year if they wanted to go 14 and 12 and they wanted to add that speed guy and that defense guy, and they didn't carry Bradley Zimmer. Instead, they carried 13 pitchers. And I think that the sort of worst case scenario that the Blue Jays would be envisioning and wanting to protect themselves against is, all right, game one, Kevin Gausman starts. And yeah, he gives you like, you know, 6 2/3 really good innings, but it's a tie game. And then you burn through like a Swanson, Mesa, Hicks, Romano in a tie game that gets extended into the 11th, the 12th. Remember, no zombie runner in the postseason. So this is now a game that is going 13, 14 innings. And here's Jimmy Garcia. And now you've used Chad Green. And oh no, you got walked off by the Rays in the bottom of the 13th. And now you're coming back in game two and you're starting Jose Berríos, but it is must win, like absolute win time. So Berríos is out of there after two trips through and you're going back to Romano and back to Hicks and back to Green and back to Mesa. And yes, they get you through and you edge out that winning game two, but now you're staring down game three and it is... your entire bullpen is on back-to-backs, probably extended back-to-backs because it's the postseason and the Rays are fouling off a ton of pitches and giving you these really tough plate appearances and extending their ABs. And you are looking at a bullpen that is tired, fatigued, ineffective. The game times are all over the place. Guys haven't had their recovery. And you're thinking, man, we really wish we had that extra pitcher in our bullpen right now because we are super thin for this must-win game three.
I feel like I just listened to a Pete Walker nightmare.
But that is what the Blue Jays would be envisioning, no? That's why they would take 13.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I think that is the scenario. And I think that is like Pete Walker's like fever dreams, like just keeping him up at 2 a.m., envisioning that sort of situation. And that's their job, is to map these out. If you look at the data, obviously, pitchers are not as good on back-to-backs. They are definitely not as good on back-to-back-to-backs, right? When I say Jordan Romano should be available three times in a row, I'm not saying that like it's plan A, because it's not. You know, that's a bad case scenario. And even Jimmy Garcia, think of how many times Jimmy Garcia comes out of the bullpen. He puts up a couple 99s. I'm like, oh, I look down at my FanGraphs depth chart. I'm like, when did he last pitch? Oh, it was 4 days ago. You know, like that's when you see the better stuff from these guys. Yenesis Cabrera, he's coming out throwing 99. He's locating everything. Oh yeah, he hasn't pitched in 3 days. So I understand all of that points to taking another pitcher, and they're probably going to take another pitcher. But there's also, like, alongside that nightmare scenario, there are like the more likely scenarios where, you know, Gausman gives you six, and, you know, then you go something like, you know, Jimmy and Hicks and Romano, and you win that game. And then the next day you're losing big early and it's Trevor Richards who pitches two innings, and, you know, and then you're good going into game three and there's no problem. So I think they'll take 13, but it's also possible that they will look at last year and they'll say, you know what, like, part of the reason they lost is they did not have good outfield defense, and they did not have Bradley Zimmer. They did take Bradley Jr., but they did not have Bradley Zimmer on the roster. And I wonder if they say, we want to have more position player options to impact things late in the game.
I wonder if they've just raised the floor of their outfield defense to the point where they'd feel okay with, if we have to pinch hit for Varsho in a really tough lefty matchup late in a game, like, that's fine. We could throw Witt in left field and feel good about having Kevin Kiermaier covering more ground in center, and George Springer still in right. I get it. Like, it would be nice late in a game if you really needed a speed element, and say it's, you know, Brandon Belt reaches with a 5-pitch walk to lead off the inning. Boom, here's Cameron Eden, right? Or for Alejandro Kirk, boom, here's Cameron Eden. And here's somebody who, you know, Kirk hits a double with one out in the eighth. And you're like, geez, are we going to need like two hits to score this guy? You put in Cameron Eden, now all you really need is a ground ball single. And that guy is going to be burning around the bases with 30 feet per second sprint speed. I get it. That's a nice to have. But it is like you are taking a real risk if you are not including that safety net of that extra pitcher on the chance that you have extra inning games, or like games where you just have to burn through a bunch of relievers for one reason or another. Remember, it's postseason. So even a Jordan Romano, if he enters an outing and he just clearly doesn't have it, you know, if the velo isn't there, or if, you know, he walks his first two batters, he might be out of there after 12 pitches. Like, you might be making a move very, very quickly. We've seen this in postseasons in the past. Like, you can throw out whatever the rules were, whatever the trust tree looked like over 162. In the postseason, like, you have to be that much more reactionary and decisive based on what is happening on that night, particularly in a three-game wildcard series. So I just think that the Blue Jays will look at it and say, we'd much rather have that added layer of protection of that 13th pitcher so that we don't get caught with our pants down in a really bad situation.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with your assessment of what they will do. I disagree with the idea of taking that 13th pitcher. So to me, I think they should take 12. Do you have kind of a firm stance one way or the other? You can see both sides. Where do you land on that?
I could see both sides. If I was the decision maker, I would take the 13th pitcher.
Interesting. Okay. So I would go 12. I would go 12 arms. I think they will take 13. And sounds like you agree that 13 is a good way to go, which totally see those arguments. So then if they take 13 pitchers, this is where it actually gets really interesting on the position player side, because on the position player side, that means that you're going to have 13 position players. And 10 of those, well, I would say 11 of those are actually locks, right? Because you have the starting nine, plus you have Tyler Heineman, plus you have Whit Merrifield. Those guys are locks, right?
Locks of all locks. Yes.
So then, as you mentioned earlier, then you're choosing two of Espinal, David Schneider, and Cam Eden. And that's where it gets actually really interesting, because Espinal, if they were facing a left-handed pitcher, I think we would see Espinal 100% on the roster because they really like him against lefties, and there would be a case for him to be starting a game. They're not going to face a left-handed starting pitcher. So this is where, do you choose the power option that Davis Schneider gives you? Do you choose the speed that Cam Eden gives you? Or do you want to take Espinal anyway, because he still would give you a late game AB against a lefty and he's your only backup shortstop?
You may not be facing left-hand starter, but you are still facing like a Jake Diekman or like a Colin Poche late in the game against the Rays. And then, I mean, with Minnesota, I couldn't even name their lefty relievers off the top of my head, to be honest with you. I've been preparing much more for the Rays because I just think that's what's going to happen. But yeah. I'm sure there is somebody that is really effective against lefties in Minnesota's bullpen, and they're probably going to target Belt, Biggio, and Kiermaier, and Varsho as well, by the way. Like, the Blue Jays very likely to start four left-handed hitters in the wild card series. Belt, Biggio, Kiermaier, Varsho. Like, those guys are all in the lineup. So the Rays are going to be targeting those hitters with lefties. And if you really do need a hit from a Kiermaier or Varsho, a late game spot, couple runners on, two outs, I think you might go to an Espinal in that situation. Even a Biggio. Yeah, I know he's performing well lately and he's had some results against lefties, but like, the Blue Jays showed their hand this year with the way they used Biggio against lefties, which is that they did not use him much at all. So I think that if you're John Schneider, you're going to want to have that Espinal option off the bench to pinch hit in those spots, as well as to cover you for infield defense. If you don't carry Espinal, your backup shortstop is a Biggio or a Chapman, and those guys are already playing positions for you in your lineup.
Okay, agree with everything, but I'm going to throw a devil's advocate at you here. In the likely scenario, like, Whit Merrifield is not starting. He's on the bench for the foreseeable future. So is there not some redundancy there between Whit Merrifield and Santiago Espinal, in that you've got these right-handed hitting infielders, and Schneider... David Schneider gives you a bit of a different look in the sense that he can hit one out of the park. If you need a three-run homer, like if it's game three and it's Varsho's turn up and they have Colin Poche on the mound, you need a three-run jack. Like, I'm going to David Schneider in that situation. I'm not looking to Santiago Espinal.
And I think that they're all on the roster because you're not taking Cameron Eden.
Oh,
right?
No.
Oh, this is a bridge you won't cross.
No. To me, this is just my personal opinion, okay? Obviously. To me, Cam Eden has to be on the roster.
Has to be. He doesn't even have a big league plate appearance, Ben.
And he shouldn't get one. Yeah. But he has to be on the roster.
I don't know. I would much rather take Merrifield, Schneider, and Espinal on my roster
and have
those three options. I would like guys on my bench who can hit. If I'm taking, look, if I've got like 14 position players, sure, I can like have the speed specialist in there, yeah, defense specialist, whatever. If I'm only taking 13, which is this scenario where we're going 13 pitchers, 13 position players, I'd want 13 guys who I trust to hit, who I trust to take a plate appearance, because you're likely to come up with, well, you're not likely, but it's a possibility that you're going to end up in an extra inning game and you're going to have made a bunch of moves because you're playing the Rays and they're constantly countering you and constantly putting you in these difficult positions and matching up with you. I think you're going to utilize your bench. I think you're going to pinch hit a lot. And I think it's going to be hard to avoid having some of the guys coming off your bench taking plate appearances. And I don't know that you want the untested minor leaguer who like does not have particularly impressive offensive results at minor leagues, in the minor leagues to this point in his career, taking those plate appearances.
Oh yeah, you definitely don't. Like, you don't want Cam Eaton batting. Like, definitely not. But I still think, and this wouldn't be the case on every roster or even on every version of the Blue Jays roster, but I think because Alejandro Kirk, Jansen's out, so Alejandro Kirk is starting every playoff game for this team. Like, it's just, you're not starting.
Unquestionable. Yes.
Yeah. So he's starting every game.
Speaking of guys who you don't necessarily want taking plate appearances late in games.
Yep. But Heinemann might, actually, because of, you know, how it unfolds, because they'll pinch run for Kirk and then Heinemann will come in and then you can't pinch hit for Heinemann. So Heinemann might actually hit.
So, but I want to correct myself because I said I want four guys on my bench who I feel good about taking plate appearances late in a playoff game. It's actually only three. It's actually only Espinal, Merrifield, and Schneider.
It's only three. But because Kirk is going to play every single game, and because Belt, against the right-handed starters that they're going to face, will also play every single game, and because those two guys are two of the worst base runners in Major League Baseball, especially Kirk, but Belt is below average. Maybe he's not the worst in Major League Baseball, but Belt is like distinctly a below average base runner, and Kirk is like literally among the worst. He does tons of other things well. Not trying to sit here and crap on Alejandro Kirk. He's been really, really good, but we all know he's not a good base runner. So you want to be able to have a couple of options, and I think Whit Merrifield is one of them, but I wouldn't want the other option to be Davis Schneider. Like, I think the upgrade as a pinch runner to a guy like Cam Eaton, who's 53 of 57 stealing bases in the minor leagues, should get a couple shots this weekend to get that first one under his belt in the show. Like, to me, Cam Eaton is a huge difference maker if you're down one or if you're tied.
I'd feel a lot better about my side of this if Santiago Espinal had shown some better base running this year.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
Because then I could just say, don't worry about it. Like, Santiago Espinal is a fine base runner and he's fast. But yeah, he hasn't graded very well in his base running or in his sprint speed. I do think that Cam Eaton would instantly be the fastest player on this team as soon as he gets the opportunity to show it, which he really hasn't yet to this point. So that is a weapon. And like, there, you know, you really just have to decide what you think kind of the difference is there between, like, the, you know, how much faster Cam Eaton would be as a pinch runner over a Heinemann pinch running for Kirk, or an Espinal pinch running for Belt, or a Davis Schneider, whatever, however the Blue Jays would want to play that, versus the downside of, like, well, if, like, the difference of Cam Eaton having to take a plate appearance against a Poche or whoever it is going to be coming out of the Rays bullpen, a Diekman, whoever, versus having, like, Santiago Espinal on your roster to do that. Because you haven't actually said who you're excluding from the roster yet, but I'm assuming that you are excluding Santiago Espinal.
In my actual scenario, I would exclude Ryu and Jay Jackson, and I would go 12 pitchers, and you still have a 9-man bullpen. It's going to be okay. In the 13 and 13 world, I would exclude Espinal, and that wouldn't be the plan A. I would like to have Espinal. I think that there's a real use case for him, but in this situation, I think there's some redundancy between him and Merrifield. I would take Merrifield. I would take Davis Schneider because I think Davis Schneider could run into one and he could hit a 3-run homer that changes the complexion of that whole series.
When's the last time Santiago Espinal had a plate appearance for the Blue Jays is my question. It's
Friday,
like, right? It's been like a week since he's even seen a live pitch. It's been somewhat similar for Davis Schneider, although I think he's had like a pinch hit here and there.
He played Saturday.
He played Saturday, right? So like the Blue Jays really aren't using either of those guys at all. They definitely aren't using Espinal at all. And they look, they've been facing a ton of right-handed starters, and Kevin Biggio's been giving you something. And so there hasn't really been a spot for Espinal, but I wonder how that plays into it as well. The fact that Espinal would be like really, really cold coming off the bench in the postseason. Yeah. Like he hasn't seen a live pitch in a week. I assume we'll get something this weekend if the Blue Jays are able to clinch, but if they aren't, and if Sunday's a must win, well, then you might have a scenario where Espinal is going into the wild card series like a week and a half without actually seeing a live pitcher.
Oh yeah. I mean, and let's say that his time to shine comes up on Thursday. That would be a day shy of 2 weeks between plate appearances. So, you know, all of that points to, you know, as we've touched on already, like clinch as soon as possible. And it's not like they're not trying, but, you know, clinch early, because then you can get these guys in there. You can get a Davis Schneider and an Espinal some at-bats to the point that they're not going in there cold in the biggest moment of their professional careers.
This is where the games that the Blue Jays coughed up to the Mariners repeatedly this year, the four-game sweep against the Rangers earlier this month, this is where this is really biting you. Because you have just one more of those wins. Like you're clinching a lot earlier, a lot easier, and now you are optimizing for the wildcard series. As things stand right now, the morning of Friday, September 29th, the Blue Jays are optimizing for tonight. They're optimizing for hours from now for how do we win this game that's right in front of us. I think they would feel a lot better about their options. I think a lot of these decisions would be a lot easier to make if the Blue Jays were in a position where they had clinched even just going into the weekend, or if you're popping champagne on Thursday and you know that you've got these final three games to figure some things out, I think that would make life a lot easier. But the Blue Jays didn't win a game against Texas earlier this month, and they coughed up those leads to the Mariners in their series with Seattle, and they didn't play Baltimore well enough earlier this season. They dropped their first, what was it, 7 straight to the Red Sox this season. This is where those early season losses are really hurting the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and they've had their chances, right? Like, you can't blame anyone but yourself at this point in the season. They've had a mostly healthy team. They have a talented roster. They've spent a ton of money. It's like, if you're not getting in, if you're not giving yourself any breathing room, like, there's no one to blame but yourself at this point.
Totally agree.
Anything else that you want to get to here, a wild card roster or otherwise, when it comes to these Blue Jays?
I mean, we don't do it enough, man. We just need to shout out this Blue Jays starting rotation. I think it's just one of the best that we've seen in franchise history. Like, I know the Blue Jays had a lot of good starters in their day. I know they had the Steve and Key years and like the Holiday Burnett years, and like Roger Clemens won a couple Cy Young awards, but I can't think of a Blue Jays rotation in franchise history that has had the quality of depth that this one has. I mean, we're talking four starters with over 30 starts, over 175 strikeouts, lower than a 4 ERA. It's just so exceptional and so rare. Like, to see a guy like Chris Bassitt surpassing 200 innings pitched on Thursday, like, that would have been just a cool story in and of itself. And he's like the number three in this rotation after Jose Berrios, who has had this like remarkable bounce back year and has made 2022 look like a complete outlier. And behind Kevin Gausman, who's going to be very likely a Cy Young finalist. It's just so, so impressive what the starting staff has done. We know how hard it is to log the kind of workloads at the kind of level of quality that these Blue Jays starters have. And I think it's something that people are going to look back on in the future and say, you know, wow, that was a really remarkable Blue Jays rotation. Probably the best that we have ever seen in the history of this franchise.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. And I think too, like, 200 innings in this context is just so different than 200 innings in 1987 or 1998. And it was impressive then. That was a good number. That's always been a good number for a starting pitcher. But to do it now, I mean, that's really impressive durability and just effectiveness too, because there's no way that you get to pitch 200 innings unless you're pretty good. I mean, that's a lot. That's 600 outs. That's a lot of batters that you are retiring in the major leagues. So yeah, Bassitt's been tremendous. It actually sort of reminds me to raise the possibility of, you know, rotation order. You know, with Kevin Gausman, you know, tentatively lined up for a game one, that would set Barrios game two, Bassett game three. We've touched on this before, but you know, would you look to alter that at all if you're the Jays? Would you be open to playing around with that, or do you just sort of keep it in the order that they're now in?
The incredible, like, it's, that's another incredible thing about this rotation, that it really doesn't matter. Like, Kevin Gausman's going to start game one, and Barrios and Bassett, you feel great about either of those guys in game two. So you can really do anything you want. And it's not, it's, and all of the outcomes are good with these three starters. Usually you go into a wild card series with two starters you feel good about and one who you're pretty iffy on. For instance, if the Blue Jays face the Rays in the wild card series, like, I think you'll see Glasnow, Eflin, bullpen day. I think that's likely how they would line it up. I'd Savale is fine, and he would likely be part of that bullpen day, but it's not a scenario where I think you're going to see Aaron Savale go six innings. It's a scenario where he probably enters behind an opener, or a scenario where he takes like a trip and a half through, and then the Rays try to bullpen it from there. The Blue Jays legitimately have three starters who they can throw in this wildcard series who you have no problem taking two and a half, three trips to the order. Like, who could get six innings into a start? So all of the outcomes are good. So you can just go in any direction that you want with this, and you're going to feel really good about your starting pitching.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And so with that in mind, because they're, you know, Barrios and Bassett are both really, really good, you're happy with either, like really happy with either, I would just keep them in their current order because it's just a little simpler mentally and as far as their prep. So that would be my thought. But here's a, let me throw one last take at you here before we step aside. If they have to use Gausman on Sunday to get into the postseason and they make it and that works, then you're going, let's say for argument's sake, it's Barrios, Bassett, games one and two. My game three starter in that situation, none other than Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah, it might be Trevor Richards for me, but it's not Yusei Kikuchi.
No. Yeah. And again, Yusei would pitch in that game.
Yes.
But it would not be, because you look at how the Rays lined up. It's Yandy, it's Rosarena, it's Caminero. It's a lot of right-handed hitters at the top. Paredes is often up there. So you end up looking at these right-handed hitters, start with one of those right-handed relievers, and hand it over to the bullpen from there. Because, you know, any sort of traditional usage, I think, is pretty much out the window, you know, at this point. And obviously, if you get to an ALCS at seven games, it's a little bit of a different story. You probably do go back to being a bit more traditional. But if you're in a one-game, three-game series, like, just do what it takes to win.
Yeah, the other thing that impacts it is how you used your bullpen in the first two games, how many innings you had to cover, who had to pitch a lot, like what the pitch counts are. So like that would impact it as well. But yeah, I'm in, if I don't have Gausman for this series, and who knows, like maybe Gausman would be available for a short outing on Thursday.
Maybe he's the opener.
Maybe, right? Like I haven't even allowed my mind to go down that road.
Actually, yeah, because that would be 3 days rest. Honestly, like he probably would be available in some capacity, and they probably should use him in some capacity.
Yeah, it's that push-pull of like, this is a must-win game. Do we use our best starter for however much we can get from him, even though that's going to compromise his ability to come back early in a divisional series where we could be three games and out, right? Or do we feel good enough about the rest of our staff that we can win this third game and have Kevin Gausman ready to start game one of a divisional series and hopefully put ourselves in a really good position there? There's like a lot of
they really got to win this weekend. They really like they got to win before Sunday, because if you win before Sunday, then some of those questions fade away.
Yeah, they really needed to win like the game they coughed up in May, Ben. Like you know, they really needed to win one of those ones against Seattle that I keep going back to, because those was like, there's just so many heartbreakers in those games. I mean, you know, Jordan Romano really needed to not like give up a couple bombs to Alex Verdugo, you know, that changed games, right? Like I just but every team is going to have a million things like that throughout their season that could have gone another way. But yeah, for you know, for the Blue Jays, like they should have been in a position where they knew their playoff fate long before this weekend and weren't, as we sit here right now, dealing with the uncertainty of, are we going to beat the Rays? Is Seattle or Texas going to help us out elsewhere? They're playing on the West Coast, so we don't even know when we play the Rays, like how those things went. The circumstances are really unideal for the Blue Jays right now.
Being on the West Coast is a low-key slight advantage.
Yes, in more ways than one. Can I also say, final thought, as I'm shouting things out, because it's the end of the season, right? So we kind of have a better idea of just what this team was and just how things played out. Blue Jays defense, just so, so exceptional. So good. Yeah. Seemingly, honestly, like getting better as the season goes on. Like, Blue Jays haven't committed an error in something like 10 games. They have the like second fewest errors across MLB since the All-Star break. They've set a franchise record for the most error-free games in a season. And like errors are a terrible measure of defense. They're a really dumb stat when you think about it, but we could break this down via outs above average. We can look at defensive runs saved. I mean, the Blue Jays have led MLB in defensive run saves, like lapped MLB, for some time now. You know, their center field defense by DRS, by OAA, whatever you like, is elite. I mean, Varsho, Kiermaier, like these guys are right at the top of the leaderboards for outfield DRS. Alejandro Kirk ranks very, very well as a catcher behind the plate by his blocking, by his receiving. You know, Matt Chapman hasn't had a Matt Chapman-esque season defensively, but still ranks very well among third basemen. And quietly, Bo Bichette has not committed an error in 50 games. He has been someone who, via the advanced metrics, like grades out as just an average MLB shortstop. But that like tells you he's actually come a long way, because he was significantly below average via advanced metrics in previous seasons. And the eye test would tell you that he is just a lot more confident, short, a lot more fluid, a lot more dependable than he's been in recent years. And oh, by the way, Kevin Biggio makes like this highlight reel diving play at a different position every night. So I do think that we need to acknowledge that the Blue Jays have been just a tremendous defensive team.
Oh, yeah. And I think, like, you know, on Bo, calling him an average defensive shortstop sounds backhanded, but like it's really quite a compliment. If you were an average F1 driver, you're an amazing driver. You know, like he's come a long way. He's a very, very good defensive shortstop against the best in the world. Kevin Biggio has played the best defense I've ever seen him play. It's not even close. Kirk has been great defensively, not only with the strikes at the bottom of the zone that Aaron Boone loves so much, but also picking off runners, making little plays out in front of the plate on bunts. Like, he's been tremendous, both offensively and defensively, actually. So when it comes to the keeping runs off the board, can't say enough about this Blue Jays team. They are really, really good at that. And yeah, if they run into a few in the playoffs, then who knows? We might be talking about this team for a few more weeks.
Yeah, I think that with Bo, just go back and read every report on him out of the draft and as a minor leaguer, and as, you know, the kind of industries started gathering data on him, and every single report would say, yeah, really good, like bat to ball, aggressive play to port approach, you know, some power in there, but probably a second baseman, maybe even a corner outfielder, not someone who's likely to stick it short. So for Bo to get himself to like a place where he's an MLB average shortstop, like an average shortstop at the highest level of baseball playing every single day, is actually really impressive, and actually tells you he's come a very long way from where he was even just a year or two ago. I don't think that he's ever going to be like Dansby Swanson out there, or, you know, name your elite MLB defender, but to even just be an average shortstop, like capable of playing the position every single day and, you know, making plays there the way that he has, it's huge. Like, it's, that is massive improvement for him over the course of his career. It's one of many reasons that like Bo Bichette in a couple of years time is going to sign a contract, whether it's an extension with the Blue Jays or a free agent contract with the Blue Jays or with one of 29 other teams, that is in excess of $300 million. Like, that is the caliber of player that he is.
Yeah. Great player. Great player. The Jays in a good position here with him and Vlad for 2 years plus, 3 to 25 games, depending on how this unfolds. So you got to make the most of this chance with these guys, right? You only get so many years with these players performing the way they are. You know, the Jays still have a chance for a real run here. So we'll see if they can do it. Last call here, Arden.
That, well, you just reminded me of something. sorry, you did just remind me of something. I know we've, you know, this entire second segment's been a podcast, but for all those reasons you cited, right, this is a huge opportunity for the Blue Jays, and if they miss the playoffs, it would be a just colossal missed opportunity. But how many seasons do you get an American League East that looks like it does this year? Credit to the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, they have the most wins in the American League. They're going to finish with the most wins in the American League. They've won 100 games. They are the best team in this division. Tampa, of course, near the top. They typically are. But how often do you see an AL East table where the Yankees and Boston are at the bottom of it? And the Yankees aren't even a postseason club, where the Yankees are just like a 500 team. I mean, there have been just five times since 1995 have there been... has there been an MLB postseason without the New York Yankees involved? The AL East has never finished in the order that it's in right now. I mean, since the Rays joined it in 1998, like that, we've just never seen the Yankees and Boston in 4 and 5. Like, this is just, that does not happen. It is so uncommon for these well-resourced and annually competitive franchises to be complete afterthoughts in this division. So it's just another reason why, like, this is such a massive opportunity this season for the Blue Jays, and why they need to win some games this weekend and get into the postseason in any way possible.
They really do. And the opportunities there in front of them, because the Rays, despite their record, are a little weakened. The Orioles are a really, really good team. I think they're better than the Blue Jays, but it's not as much as the standings would suggest. The Jays could beat the Orioles if they face them. And I actually think the only team that's like clearly better than the Blue Jays is the Astros. And the Astros might not make it. So, you know, baseball's weird. You know, we'll see where it all goes here. We will obviously be following up on At the Letters as this all unfolds. So stay tuned as for what that looks like, where we are. Arden doesn't know. I don't know. No one knows. So we'll keep you posted. But thanks for listening to us on At the Letters. And thanks as well to our producer, Mike Rogerson. We will talk to you soon on ATL.